From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Compank himself.
Oh, hey.
Hi. There.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
How's it going? Happy to be back here. Another episode of Bob After Dark here, live throughout
live
the nation.
Live throughout the world. The world, you say. The world.
There's not one piece of the world that doesn't hear this show right now, I don't think.
Nah,
you could get it anywhere. Isn't that amazing?
It's an amazing thing to think about, absolutely.
We're all connected through this podcast here. Some folks are listening that's right next door to us. Some folks are listening on the other side of the world. It's pretty spectacular.
We have listeners in several countries around the world.
Yes.
We're big in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. Got a summer home there.
By the way, before we begin, we have to squash a rumor real quick.
A rumor. Okay.
Bob After Dark is not purchasing the WWE.
I heard that speculation.
Is Bob buying the WWE? No. Let me just squash that rumor really fast.
Yeah.
No, I will not be purchasing the pro wrestling company.
Oh, that would be pretty cool. I mean, it's in the budget, I think.
It's in the budget. They don't have a finalized number. I've heard
You're
2
right.
billion.
You're
I
right.
just That means we don't get a gold-plated jet this
We're
year.
We're not going past 3 billion.
I promise you guys this isn't a wrestling podcast, but Kyle Pack and I are avid wrestling fans.
Yeah, so.
And we were discussing that before the show, and we just had squashed that rumor. Anyway, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, where your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and of course, Count Panic's weekend update.
The weekend update, Bob, is a nice weekend, of course, coming off the two holiday weekends there we had.
Back to the full swing of
this
things.
This one, was nice and relaxing. Now, Bob, my weekend was fine. It was peaceful, of course. But your weekend.
My weekend.
It was something else. I've seen the pictures, Bob. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, I was at MAGFest. Hello, all of you MAGFest listeners that are tuning into the show from you guys were at the con and you saw the two panels. I presented twice at MAGFest. I presented at I did a creepypasta panel, and then I did a creepy Pokedex panel, which was something I just pulled out of the ether.
Yes.
I was like, you know what, it relates, I guess. And I'll tell you what, out of something that I literally slapped together with some peanut butter and jelly, that panel was huge.
Hopping.
I don't know if you guys saw the picture or not. We had, so the room capacity, I think it was 180, right? That sounds about right. Let's say the room capacity is 180. So they put me in a smaller room this year. No fault of their own. That's just how the cookie crumbles. Huh. We overcrowded the room where people were lined up against the walls.
Yeah.
And people were lined up in the aisles. And people were sitting down everywhere until I legitimately caused security to show up and start turning people away because it was turning into a fire hazard.
Well, see, that's the thing. At least you didn't cause a fire there, Bob, but everybody looked like they were having a good time right here your panel, and it sounds like it turned out to be a fine event there.
It was a blast. MAGFest in general is one of my favorite conventions to go to throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's out in Maryland. I had to think about that. Maryland, right in National Harbor, about 10 minutes away from the White House and the Congress building.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun. It's a video gaming convention that runs 24 hours. It never
Is
stops.
Is it really 24 it, hours?
24 hours.
Holy
the
smokes.
Gaming room, the merch room, the everything room. Like, you've done cons with me.
Yeah, but never 24.
Six o'clock, you're done.
Yeah.
Go have some dinner and you're going to party all night. No, this show.
24 hours.
This show runs 24 hours. So it was an amazing experience. At one point, without any direction of my own, and I kid you not, there was a Bob chant going, and it was so loud. That show impressed the crap out of me. So yeah. Thank you guys for MagFesters for having me, and MagFest for having me once again. And I'll see you guys in 2024, TV show permitting.
Yeah, good outing.
Speaking of outing, I do have next week, if you're listening to this, the second week of January, I have one more week to go, and I'll be in Columbus, Ohio at OhioCon. I'm speaking 5 times at that convention.
Five times? What period of time here?
All throughout the evening. I'll
5 times in one evening?
No, God, no. Panic.
I was going to say.
5 times throughout the course of 3 days.
Three days.
I'll be doing Bob After Dark stuff for all 3 days. Yeah. I'll do a graphic of a complete schedule. OhioCon arguably is my biggest convention appearance of the year. They do really good for me at that convention, and I know a lot of my fans come from that con. So you guys get a chance to see me 5 times at OhioCon. I'm doing a slew of interesting stuff there, including but not limited to the Paranormal Pajama Party.
The Paranormal Pajama Party. What does that mean?
I show up wearing your pajamas, appropriate for the convention, of course, and you're going to entertain me. I'm not telling ghost stories. You're telling me your ghost stories.
In pajamas.
Yeah. Because I'm going right to bed after that.
It's not. Now, this is not 24 hours.
No.
You got to go to bed.
I think my latest panel is like at 11 o'clock or something.
Which some would say
that's late enough, right? But that's exciting news. So the Columbus fans that are listening, I know a lot of – I've had fans reach out. Are you going to be at OhioCon? Yes, I will be at OhioCon. We'll make sure we get the proper graphics up later in the week and – I'll see you guys in Columbus.
There you go. See you in Columbus. Yeah.
You know, Count.
Yeah.
You said your weekend was uneventful.
No, not uneventful. Just a calm weekend.
Calm weekend. Yeah. Calm's good.
Calm is good.
Did you watch any good movies?
Movies?
Did you watch a movie since last time I seen you?
Did I watch a movie since the last time you saw me?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to make
conversation. I thought this was a trick question.
No, I'm trying to make conversation before we dive. Usually you give me like a thing and then we go back and forth. You're like, it was calm. I didn't do anything.
I thought I had homework to watch.
Oh, no, I didn't give you homework. I'm asking you a sincere question.
Did you watch? No, I didn't.
Did you do anything? Did you watch TV?
I went for a walk, Bob.
What'd you do during your walk? Come on, man.
Went for a walk. I looked at some sticks and everything and yeah, it was calming. It was relaxing.
All right. You ready to dive into the show,
then? Sure, yeah.
All right. So if this is your first time watching Bob After Dark, we split the show up into two parts. First part of the show is where we look at the weird, spooky news of the week. This is where you, the fans, submit news articles to me to look over. Any of these articles can be anything weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction or ghosts or cryptids making it into major media or just the really strange and unusual news stories out there. We like a look at them and we talk about them. And, of course, we get the hashtags Panic Stake.
Yeah.
And at the end of the show, we dive right into the lore of the week. Which is where I pick out a topic or something. One time, Count Panic picked out a topic.
Just last episode.
So we look at the lore of the week, we look at a topic, and that's our topic.
There you go.
But you ready to dive into some news articles?
Take a deep dive, yeah.
Deep dive! Then we're going to start off with a very exciting one. This one's a bit on the strange side, so this isn't necessarily paranormal, but it's on the strange spectrum. Written by our old pal Tim Banal, all of our articles. You know what? I don't like to use Coast to Coast as a piggyback for my news articles, but sometimes, man, they knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
It just works. And I got 3 great articles. Tim Banal and the Coast to Coast news staff, I just want you to know that I appreciate you.
We do.
I appreciate you tremendously. Not only is Coast to Coast a show that we look up to here at the Bob After Dark, it's what we aspire to be, of course. But the news team really just knocks it out of the park. So sometimes it's just easier to pick it back off of them. I don't like to do it, but we're doing it anyway. All right, let's go on. So this news article comes to us from Tim Banal at Coast to Coast AM. And a series of mysterious antennas are found throughout the foothills of Salt Lake City, Utah. Authorities in Utah are trying to get to the bottom of a strange mystery involving a series of puzzling antennas that have been discovered throughout the foothills of Salt Lake City. According to a local media report, the peculiar case began approximately a year ago when a handful of peculiar devices were first found. Since that time, and particularly over the last few months, several more of the gadgets have been stumbled upon to the point of the Salt Lake City Recreational Trails Manager Tyler Forenow indicated that, and I quote, "Now it might be as much as a dozen of these antennas popping up," or antennae is the correct word, right? Yeah. "In addition to sporting an antenna, the curious contraptions also feature a solar panel and a locked battery box. Upon being discovered, bolted into different peaks and summits and ridges around the foothills," Forenow said. "The devices are promptly removed by city officials, who are now hoping not only to figure out their purpose, but also determine who keeps installing them, which is a mystery. We just don't leave things on public lands anymore," he laminated. "You have to ask for permission. While one antenna was found on property belonging to the University of Utah, officials there say that they are unaware to any connection to any devices which keep appearing in that area. As for what the device could be doing, Forenow acknowledged that one of the theories, which seems to be the most popular one, it's related to a cryptocurrency and relaying networks and being able to make money off of that. Whether that is the case or not, he expressed concern that the contraptions found so far could start more than a troubling trend, and declared that we want to stop it before it comes a dumping ground for dozens and dozens more antennae. Presumably, by calling attention to the problem, the city hopes that whoever is installing the devices will put an end to the mysterious project, which some have likened into the infamous monolith craze that started in Utah back in 2009. We covered that back then, if you remember, and then quickly spread around the world. Hashtag panics take.
That is interesting, Bob, especially the connection there to some cryptocurrency situations. Now, you know, some people, I've heard this before, they liken like a paranormal story to, you know, the current day economy crypto issue. But you really think, though, that that might be the true source? Because it could be something else, I feel.
No. What's your take? What do you think it is?
Well, they want you to think it's cryptocurrency. It's Dogecoin or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. But I
To the moon.
I don't know if you ponder this a little bit more, and I'll have to ponder it. It seems like it could be something entirely different here, Bob, where it has nothing to do whatsoever with cryptocurrency, but I just can't put my finger on it. What could it be? My finger.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. I know enough about cryptocurrency, right? I know a little bit. And I've heard of people you needing, like, really powerful computers to be able to mine this stuff and be able to make their money. I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of needing an antenna for it. And now I'm not your typical, you know, computer genius. No. I just like to play one on TV, but the fact that they think it's being used for crypto seems like it's a cop out. I'm not saying put the tinfoil hats on, folks. We're not a conspiracy podcast, even though tonight we're going to tonight we might dip a little bit into that, but it's definitely, we're not a conspiracy theory podcast. We're just not, that's not what we are. But it's interesting that that's the first thing that came to mind when they were trying to figure out what this thing was.
It could be, yeah. It could be very well that, Bob.
What it likely is daisy chaining free wireless internet places.
Really?
Yeah. Now, if I admitted this, I would probably go to jail. Let's just say I know people in my past. I don't know if they still do this, but I know in the past I've known people to run antennas to get Wi-Fi signals from, you know, several blocks away using antennae. I know that was a thing you could buy back in the early 2000s. And, I mean, the fact that these are grand-scale projects make me think that they're probably trying to pick up on internet signals that are far, far away. I'm not familiar with Utah. I've never been. We've done an episode about some of the haunted locations in Salt Lake City in the past, and I can tell you that it is a pretty remote area, all things considered. I mean, Salt Lake City's a big city, but the surrounding area, that is a pretty remote area. and maybe the internet signal's not the best in the world, and you got some, I don't want to say nefarious people, but let's just say some creative-minded people that banded together and are like, you know, we're going to do better than the internet that we're offered. We're just going to... going to take it by force.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that's what it is, but then, you know, you wonder what... That's a lot of antennae for a project. They're saying a dozen, so it's like, what are they doing? And that's, you know, that's a lot of power.
Seems like something shady going on, if you ask me, right?
Pirate radio, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting video. It's an interesting take. I'm curious what it's going to lead from this.
Yeah.
And I'm even more interested to see if these antennae still pop up even after the city declared it a thing that they're taking down.
Like just keeps popping up randomly?
They keep popping up, like the monolith situation. Yeah. You remember the monoliths, right?
The monoliths.
We talked about the monoliths a while ago.
Yeah.
Right before the pandemic, we talked about the monoliths. Anyway, you ready to move on?
It's like the crop circles.
Well, the crop circles are different, man.
I know. Less tech involved with the crop circle.
All right, moving on. Yeah. This one comes to us from a pair of viral videos show giant figures standing atop hills in Mexico. And, Colin, I wanted to get your opinion raw live, so I'm going to send you over this.
You're going to send me it?
Yeah, I'm sending it to you right now as we speak. And I want you to watch the video, and I want to get your take as I read the article, okay? It's coming in right now.
All right.
All right, it's there. You have it. Let's dive in. So,
yep, go ahead.
All right. Two separate viral videos filmed in Mexico show what appear to be giant figures standing atop the sizable hills in different parts of the country. According to a local media report, the strangeness started late last month when a TikTok user uploaded some footage, seen below, an enormous entity walking along a hill in the city of, and I don't speak Spanish, folks, so I apologize, Talapenalata. Although it is uncertain who filmed the video and when exactly the sightings occurred, it spread like wildfire on social media, with many more marveling the staggering size of the figure and wondering if it could be a Bigfoot. Shortly thereafter, a second piece of footage showing a similar giant emerged online and went viral. The video in question is considerably clearer than the first and was to be seen and have been filmed by an astonished truck driver as he was passing through the state of, Aguascalientes. Oddly enough, it would have seemed that the scene had been posted online last March and resurfaced at the start of 2023, seemingly in response to the furor surrounding the other footage. In the video, the witness could reportedly be heard saying, "The giants invade us," as he watched the weird figure stand at the summit of the hill. As one might imagine, the footage spawned another round of speculation from viewers, who only said that perhaps the oddity was a Sasquatch. Both videos have garnered a considerable media interest in Mexico, while some observers echoing the theory that the figures may be Bigfoot, while others are simply just calling them giants. Skeptics, of course, argue that both pieces of footage are clever hoaxes or merely the result of normal-sized person appearing larger than life due to the perspective of the person behind the camera. That said, the pair of videos have drawn comparison to similar cases in the headlines made last year, wherein a bewildered witness filmed what he believed was a giant standing on top of a hill in Canada. With that in mind, what do you make of the footage? Hashtag panic stick.
I did review it, Bob, and the first video, it looked kind of like they're floating almost, it seems like there. Now, here's the thing. In all the cases, the camera's very shaky. There's no steady hand.
There's never. Come on, man. listen. I'm going to be. You know as well as I do.
Know.
You've been doing it as long as I have. Well, not as long as I have.
It's too shaky.
The video footages that you've seen since you've taken the reins as producing the show.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a non-blurry, sighting video? And B, if it isn't blurry, it's shaky.
Yes.
So you get the idea.
Well, this is kind of both. It's blurry.
It's the best of both worlds.
So it's blurry and shaky, which doesn't bode well for it to begin with. Like, it'd be interesting if it's true and it looks like a giant Bigfoot-like character walking in the hills. But, you know, it's just it's right at the top of the hill, and it's the camera's shaky and it's blurry. It's really hard to pinpoint it. It might be a hoax, Bob. It might be a hoax.
Oh, you're going with hoax.
I don't know, but it seems like there's too much going on there where it's not clear enough.
You know, Count, there's something we haven't talked about on the show before, and I guess we're going to have to make that a topic here in the very near future, is the concept that giants once walked among us, or giants might have been a predominant, you know, species at one point that walked among us on the planet. There's been some fossilized remains found. You know, you see the concept of, like, giantism, which is a real disease that people have. Look at Andre the Giant or The Big Show. Professional wrestlers that had it. So you look at things like that and you say, well, they're larger than life, but it was more common than we think. And we didn't cover it here on the show, but I think it's very fascinating that there's some potential that these things existed, and now we're seeing more and more footage of them making an appearance. I don't know if I necessarily believe that the videos here are real. I'm also not too familiar with a Hispanic Sasquatch story out of Mexico. I do know that they have their own stories of cryptids and high strangeness down there, just like any other place in the world. But I'm not overtly familiar with Mexican Bigfoot, so maybe potentially Tribe of Giants still exists down there. Maybe it's a little easier to live down there and not being afraid of, you know, high hunting people, like, you know, technology and stuff going around, right? So I'm going with I don't know. Normally I like to give you guys a proper answer of do I believe this or not. I don't necessarily think it's a hoax, but I don't know if I believe the concept of that either. I would say that it's definitely plausible. We talked about on the Loch Ness Monster episode, right?
Of course.
If there is two things on this planet that I like to believe exist just based on the evidence alone, I would argue that Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster are definitely probably the most potential realistic creatures that exist on this planet that we don't understand. A Bigfoot's big, but I wouldn't call it a giant. It's a pretty, you know, hulkier humanoid entity. These things are giant. They're big. They're bigger than a Bigfoot would be considered. So, Lost Tribe of Giants, it's an interesting topic that I think the certain paranormal podcast might have to cover here in the very near future.
You might have to. I mean, giant speculation could be a thing, too. It's just, get the camera to focus, guys. Get the camera to focus.
Cal Panic, judging the viral
video.
Why do people
take the camera down, it's in the bushes, then they go back up to the sky, then they go back down to the ground. Just leave it on the subject there.
That's fair.
Right?
All right, moving on.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to talk about, which I thought was a very fascinating bit, is do you want to know a group of people that we've never spoke about on the show before? At least not to my knowledge.
Never spoke of this group before?
No.
Who?
The royal family.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So there's Prince Harry recently came out with a book, and in the book he recounts meeting with a psychic who shared a message from Princess Diana. We have a caller on the line.
Yeah, you want to take
it? I'll take it live. I feel like it's John.
Well, you don't. We'll take it live.
John, if it's not you, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say hello, John, because I think it is you.
Bingo, Bob.
Bingo. Hello, John.
Hey, I don't know. Did I wish you a happy new year? Because I think the last
we spoke the Loch Ness Monster episode the week before last.
Yeah, I don't know. I know Steve was on here at that time.
I'll take it again, John, if you're offering.
Yeah, sure. Happy New Year.
You too, John. You too.
Steve was on the show, but I don't know if that was right after Christmas. Because I know you weren't.
It was our first episode of the New Year, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Hey, you know, I'm big into Bigfoot, and more so my wife is. And I really didn't, you know, dive into too much about the existence of Bigfoot. But listening to what you're saying about the one possibly in Mexico, my question is, and I just asked my wife that because I really didn't, didn't really think about how many Bigfoots are there. You know, when you hear about Bigfoot sightings here and there, you know, I'm thinking, well,
Pacific Northwest is some of our most sighted area here in America, at least. Okay, so in America, let's see how many I can name. You have the skunk ape in Florida. You have the Mongolia, it's the M, I can't think of the name of it. Count, you remember the Arizonian Bigfoot story?
Yeah.
The Mongolian monster. I'm going to say Mongolian. I know I'm not remembering the name correct. You have the the one that one of the presidents said they shot, FDR, believe that he fought one, a Yahoo. They refer to it as a Yahoo, and that would have been out in the Virginia area. And then you look at the Pacific Northwest, you have those are just normal Sasquatch sightings. In the Tibetan area, India, Tibet, etc., you have the stories of the Yeti, which is the Bigfoot that lives in the mountains. In Australia, you have the Yowie, another type of Sasquatch creature, very similar to the stories we have here in America. As far as characteristics, they're all pretty much the same concept. There's different sightings all over the world, different names, but the idea stays the same. Even here in Indiana, we have the story of the Men of the Bushes, giant creatures, not giants, but Sasquatchian creatures that would live in southern Indiana that live in brush, and they would come out, you know, during times when they think it'd be safe and would go hunting in the woods in southern Indiana. So I hope that helps your answer there, John.
Yeah, I really never really realized not so much all of them, but all the names that they got, and, you know. So, you know, like a stupid question. I mean, do they reside in a state? Do they multiply? You know, are they,
so,
do they multiply?
So you that's know, a great.
How did their existence come into being, I guess?
Man, John, sounds like this needs to be a future topic of an episode here. No. Let me give you the basics here. So there are many theories, if you believe in the Bigfoot or the Sasquatch, right? There are many theories of how they get around, where they came from. Some people believe that they are an alien prisoner, and an alien species left the Bigfoot on planet Earth as a prison for it. There are some interesting theories that they travel through like teleportation portals, and they kind of are able to teleport via portal, and they're ripping holes in time and space, pocket dimensions. So like, there's many theories of what it could be.
Well, that sure clears it up. I mean, I didn't, like I said, never really realized, the fact that there were so many and how they, you know, really became in existence and how they got around, that they're sighted and different states and different countries like that. But
absolutely, I think we're gonna have to do an episode on that here soon.
Yep, thanks for that info. I appreciate
absolutely
it.
John, and a happy new year to you and the missus as well.
Right. Take care, Bob.
Absolutely.
That's a good question, because people wonder, do they have families and all that?
There's
stuff,
the
you know?
The one video footage recently showed a tinier Sasquatch figure with a bigger one, assuming they can mate. It's a very, it's a possibility. I mean, again, we'll cover this in a future episode, because I could do this for,
I know,
I, there's, you watched a, there's a Travel Channel show. Of course there is, The Hunting Bigfoot.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, people make entire TV series about these things. So it's hard to like,
they had that documentary one time of a Bigfoot living with a family too. It was fascinating. Just a Bigfoot with a family.
Steve, is that you? Are you in my studio right now and calling it Harry and the Hendersons, right?
Harry and the Hendersons.
Is that what you're referring to?
That was Harry and the Hendersons. That's a movie, right?
Yeah,
you're right. I thought it was a documentary.
Yeah, I feel like I got Steve in here right now.
He probably used that one before.
Yeah, I think he probably did. I think you used it.
I've used it before outside of here.
Folks, you and I have hunted Bigfoot before.
Yeah, in the Hessville,
in
the neighborhood of Hammond, Indiana.
People believe that there was a Bigfoot in the woods here in northwestern Indiana, believe
once
it or
in
not.
The 1970s, it was captured. Not captured, but
captured,
somebody saw it.
Yes. Bob Anderson Sr., the rest of his soul, he's probably out drinking his CC one night and ended up in the woods.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the last news story, and then we'll move on to the lore of the week. We were talking about the royal family here.
Yeah.
So it is Prince Harry recounts meeting with psychic who shared message from Princess Diana. Amid the many headline-making revelations contained in Prince Harry's controversial new memoir is an unexpected foray into the world of the paranormal by an account of his meeting with a psychic who said that she can connect with Princess Diana on the other side. In detailing the peculiar story, which is reportedly featured near the end of the book titled Spare, he explains that this unnamed woman claimed to have powers, and that although he recognized the high percentage chance of, as he called it, humbuggery, which I love that word. That's my malarkey's a good one. Tomfoolery, nonsense, humbuggery. Foolishness. My new word is humbuggery.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good one.
That's the new skeptical term. I'm gonna give that to Pat. You can have that one too. He agreed to sit down with her at the urging of a trusted friend who could vouch for her versity of her gifts. Immediately upon meeting the medium, he marvels in the memoir, "I felt an energy around her." Harry goes on to write that the psychic informed him that she could feel his mother's energy around him and that her spirit with him is right now. The medium went on to tell Harry that Diana knew that he was in a state of turmoil, but assured him that you're living the life she wanted for you. Still skeptical of the psychic's powers, the prince asked for a proof, a sign, anything to assure him that the communication was genuine. In response, he writes, the medium noted a specific incident involving a Christmas ornament that his son Archie had broken and subsequently tried to fix. The psychic asserted that she knew of the event because Diana's spirit had been there at the time, and your mother says she had a bit of a giggle about that. While it is uncertain if the medium managed to convince the prince, the fact that the story was included in his memoir would seem to suggest that he became a believer after his meeting with the woman. Hashtag panics take.
You know what, Bob? That is a very interesting story there. And, you know, there's a whole thing with the royal family and the paranormal. Think about how much history for a second here with Buckingham Palace there. I mean, they don't do ghost tours in Buckingham Palace, do they?
No.
They should.
Listen, if there was any individual, and I'm not giving this man credit, if there was any individual that could do a paranormal investigation on Buckingham Palace, be Zach Baggins. Yeah. And I don't think Zach's ever done a special at Buckingham Palace before.
I'm just saying, think of all the material you might get from just walking around those halls. And
there's a lot of history in that joint.
Yeah. So yeah, Bob. I mean, the whole thing with the royal family, and you know, you get tired of hearing about them. The spirits aspect is interesting.
I find it fascinating, and it's not the first time you hear of somebody in, I don't want to say presidential because it's not the same thing, but somebody in political power, and we're going to skip over the apparent elephant in the room of, you know, conspiracy theories, because I'm sure you're probably all guessing it. But this isn't the first time somebody in political power that has come forward and talked about meeting with a psychic or meeting with a medium. In my case, a 2X large. Thanks, Joe Diamond, for that joke. You didn't laugh.
I was laughing on the inside, Bob.
Thanks, I appreciate that. This isn't the first time you hear of somebody in political power being able that have resulted to that. In fact, Mary Todd Lincoln, which is the wife of Abraham Lincoln, actually became a spiritualist and was doing seances in the White House to try to communicate with like their dead child who passed away of disease at a very young age. And that's a pretty common thing. You know, that was common. That's an interesting thing to hear. And the fact that the psychic, you know, Harry went to the psychic to see about the results of Diana. Folks, you should know my take on psychics. I think there are legitimately people out there that are gifted. I myself, I believe I'm gifted in my own way. I think a lot of the ones you see are full of humbuggery.
Yeah, humbuggery.
I'm going back to that word. I think a lot of it's humbuggery. But if you find the right one, then maybe there's something to it. Not 100%. You know what I mean? I believe it. I believe there are some out there. Maybe this one in particular just knew it. I think the story of the ornament's a fascinating one.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what I believe. It's not new. It doesn't surprise me that somebody with that kind of high in political regardness went and did their own thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that happens. Got to get in Buckingham Palace there, Bob.
Well, listen, if somebody could get me into Buckingham Palace for a paranormal investigation, you can...
Who do we talk to?
I don't even know. Chuck Pullen, can you do the...
He's the one that's not... He's not on the outside lister. You can't have Chuck Pullen inside Buckingham
Palace. I'm sure you can probably figure it out.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let's... you want to take a quick break, Count?
Sure.
All right, folks. Well, be right back for our live audience. Stay tuned. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
What'd you do during break?
During break, Bob, I traveled to Buckingham Palace.
How'd it go?
Not good, Bob. They said get out. I left. I came back here.
Ah, well, welcome back.
Thank you. I tried.
Yeah.
How about you?
I took up a new hobby.
What'd you do?
Baking.
Baking?
Yeah, I tried to make a cheesecake.
Cheesecake? How'd it come out?
It came out like a cake that was shaped like cheese.
Like Wisconsin cheesecake?
It was a cake in the shape of a slice of cheddar.
Yeah, that's nice. Oh,
I misunderstood the assignment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just, I get what you're saying. They can make a cake out of anything that looks like anything.
So, really. It is cake. That's cake. A whole meme online. Anyway. Cake. Count.
Yeah.
You know, I was at MAGFest over the weekend.
Yeah.
And would you like to know the centralized theme of MAGFest?
What was it?
MAGFest is a video gaming convention through and through. You know, big arcade. They have an indie dev room in there. It's a good time. I'm a big, you know, good video gaming convention. And we had a lot of new fans there. And I'm assuming some of them migrated over to the show topic.
Yeah.
And so what better way to come back from a stint at a very popular video gaming convention than to talk a little bit about something spooky in the realm of video gaming. Now, with that being said, I'm not doing a creepypasta because it's not creepypasta month. Need a break from that anyway. So what else is left, right?
Yeah, what do you
got? Outside of creepypastas, there's some weird video game stuff that's out there. But we're talk to you about the biggest paranormal topic in the concept of video games, and that is an arcade cabinet called Polybius or Polybius.
Polybius.
Polybius. Oh, you're familiar.
Not really, but
I was like, familiar. Oh, geez, Count,
it's a cool word.
I'm gonna move over there. You could do the
Polybius
show.
Polybius is a cool word to say, but Polybius. What does it mean?
Oh, fun fact: Polybius is actually based on a non-video game.
Okay.
You good there? I wasn't expecting you to ask
a
me that
non-video game. Okay. So anything that's not a video game is a Polybius.
What? No, silly.
Oh, it's a non-video. Oh, it's supposed to be a video game, but it's not a video
game.
Well,
no, but you were asking where the name Polybius comes
from?
Yeah,
yeah.
Polybius, or Polybius, was a Greek historian.
Okay.
He was born in 200 BCE in Megalopolis, Arcadia in Greece, and died in 118. It was a Greek statesman and historian who wrote the rise of the Rome... who wrote of the rise of Rome to world prominence. Thank you, Encyclopedia Britannica.
That's good to know. Good knowledge.
But I'm not going to bore you guys talking about an ancient philosopher. I'm going to be talking to you guys about a very interesting video game, or arcade cabinet. Mm. And when I say video game cabinet, do you know what I mean by that, Count Panic?
Video game cabinet? Like is it exactly what it means? A cabinet that stores your video games?
Arcade cabinet. Yes, actually, it's one cabinet plays one video game. It's usually an arcade, Asteroids.
Oh, okay,
Pong, Pac-Man.
You get multiple games in one machine,
or just one. Yeah. In this case, yeah, there's multi-car cabinet. Yeah. Anyway, just one video game, and in this case, Polybius was a very strange case. So let's dive in. I'm going to give a quick shout-out to Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Hey.
I never would have thought I'd be referencing them on a show, but they had a very great article written about it, so we're going to talk a little bit about it.
All believable.
During the 1980s, youthful gamers flocked to arcades with quarters in hands to play legendary games like Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. In Portland, Oregon, amongst these colorful cabinets laid Polybius. The video game was apparently so dangerous it made players sick, and the government agents used it to control minds. The game's biggest mystery, however, is whether it ever existed in the first place. Polybius is allegedly an arcade game that occupied the soda-stained rugs of Portland arcades in 1981. Dressed in an unmarked black cabinet, it attracted players through its colorful gameplay of geometric shapes and patterns dancing across the screen. The legend goes that upon pressing start, unsuspecting gamers quickly became addicted, falling into a trance-like state that triggered memory loss, seizures, blackouts, and hallucinations. The Polybius arcade game shares a name with a Greek philosopher, I was saying before, born in Megalopolis, Arcadia in 208 BC, and Polybius was a philosopher known for creating the Polybius Square. The device functioned as an encryption table that converts Greek letters into numbers to share secret messages. Polybius also translates to many lives in Greek. When players fell under the spell of Polybius, the gameplay seemed to deliver subliminal messages to them. Combined with reports of government workers in black suits recovering not quarters, but data from the arcade machines, surely something sinister was afoot. Eventually, these same workers removed the game from arcades 1 month later, with Polybius never returning to any establishments ever again. Many thought that the government workers used Polybius as an extension of MK Ultra. I'm sure you're probably wondering what MK Ultra is, Count Panic.
Yeah,
we'll get to it in a second.
Okay.
Government experiments ran by the CIA to determine ways to mind control the populace through hypnosis and drugs. Whether Greek or geek, this sounds concerning. So let's talk a little bit about what MK Ultra is. I'm just going to read you a very fast article because. When we get to the MK Ultra stuff, guys, you get into the realm of conspiracy theory, and yeah. I warned you at the beginning of the show we would be touching base on this concept of a conspiracy theory. I this isn't my type of deal, folks. It's not the show I like to run. Cover ups are one thing, but like a legit straight up thing like this, I'm just gonna read it to you.
Sure.
Project MKUltra, or just MKUltra, was an illegal human experimentation program designed and undertaken by the United States Central Intelligence Agency, or the CIA, intended to develop procedures and identify drugs that could be used in interrogations to weaken individuals and force confessions through brainwashing and psychological torture. It began in 1953 and was halted in 1973. MKUltra used numerous methods to manipulate subjects' mental states and brain functions, such as the covert administration of high doses of psychedelic drugs, psychoactive drugs like LSD and other chemicals, electroshocks, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, isolation, and many other forms of torture. MKUltra was preceded by two drug experiments, Project Bluebird and Project Artichoke. It was organized through the CIA Office of Scientific Intelligence and coordinated with the United States Army Biological Warfare Laboratories. Hmm. The program engaged in illegal activities, including the use of United States and Canadian citizens as unwilling test subjects. Over 7,000 American veterans took part in these experiments non-consensually during the 50s and through the 70s, and many suing later on. MKUltra's scope was so broad, with activities that could be carried under the guise of research at more than 80 institutions outside the military, including colleges, universities, hospitals, prisons, and pharmaceutical companies. The CIA operated using front organizations, although top officials in these institutions were aware of the CIA's involvement. MKUltra was first brought to the public attention in 1975 by the Church Committee of the United States Congress and Gerald Ford's United States President's Commission on the CIA Activities Within the United States, later known as the Rockefeller Commission. Investigative efforts were hampered by CIA Director Richard Helms' order that all MKUltra's files be destroyed in 1973. The Church Committee and Rockefeller Commission investigations relied on sworn testimony of direct participants and on other small number of documents that survived Helms' order. In 1977, a Freedom of Information Act request uncovered a cache of 20,000 documents relating to MKUltra, which led to Senate hearings. Some surviving information of MKUltra was declassified in July 2001. We are not going into this.
I know, that's deep in there, yeah.
We are not a Again, guys, I'm not a conspiracy theory podcast. It is not my, that's not my cup of tea. No. I'm not that type of Bob.
No.
I find it fascinating. I appreciate some of the theories that these people do, and I appreciate some of the research that goes into it. Let me drink some water here.
Yeah. Yeah, I get
it. It's not my, now I think, how does this relate back to Polybius?
Circle back.
Let's circle back. Despite its apparent haunting of the 1980s arcades, the first public record of Polybius surfaced in February 2000 on coinop.org, a database for arcade games. The database page provided the basis of the myths surrounding the game, alongside an image of the start screen. The Polybius start screen lacks any significant detail apart from the game's title in large letters and a 1981 Sinner Slocan Inc. The later text is supposed a copyright date and game developer, but neither seems to check out. No copyright was ever filed before the game at this time, to the point of the FBI confirming it never existed in the first place. Sinner Slocan also means mind erasing in German, according to Google Translate. While the myths of Polybius made to seem like a treacherous plot was unfolding in Oregon arcades, these rumors were disputed with real-world evidence. As for the soulless black cabinets used for Polybius, black cabinets were utilized as testing machines for new games. The artwork was not applied until the arcade cabinets were ready for a wide release. While players may have not experienced side effects of long arcade sessions through Polybius, many reports of them getting sick while playing games. In a Portland arcade, the Eugene Register newspaper outlined the story of a boy named Brian Morrow, a 12-year-old, who experienced stomach pains while playing Asteroids for 28 hours straight. Instead of being put in a Polybius-like trance, Morrow's stomach could not handle this endless supply of soda he drank, fizzling up his chance to beat the high score. In a report from the Cat de Spia, on the same day in the same arcade, 14-year-old Michael Lopez suffered a migraine and threw up in the parking lot after a long session of Tempest. Tempest has graphics in a line with Polybius' rumored pixels that could have been confused as a cursed cabinet. What about the government agents? Law enforcement would put cameras and wires inside arcade machines, hoping to catch criminals would spill their beans between rounds of gaming. Besides gaming, gambling and drug dealing were common occurrences in arcades. All these scenarios accumulate to a realistic foundation for one gaming's infamous urban legends. Despite its debates and of its existence, Polybius has appeared in many TV shows and inspired other video games. Polybius machines are located in the background of one of my favorite shows in The Simpsons, Season 18, Episode 3, Please Homer, Don't Hammer Him, and even recently as Marvel's Loki, Episode 5, Journey into Mystery. If you see the episode in The Simpsons in question, Bart is standing in front of an arcade cabinet known as Triangle Wars, and right next to it was the cabinet of Polybius, which is kind of fascinating. And then in the recent episode of Loki, in the show Loki on Disney Plus, no, Disney, you could be sponsoring me right now. My DMs are open.
You could buy
me a lot less than WWE's $2 billion. Yeah. You could buy me for $2.
I'll take it.
Disney, you could think about this. But family friendly show. Anyway, I digress. If you watch Disney's Loki, there's an episode where all the Loki variants, which is the different versions of Loki that exist all throughout, like, time and space, are meeting in a certain area. And there's a Polybius cabinet in one of the areas where, like, all the different Loki, like, came and hung out. And it was rumored that the Polybius cabinet was actually a variant on Loki.
That makes sense, yeah.
It's fascinating. It's a really cool little nod. Polybius also inspired two real video games in the same name. In 2007, developer Rogue Synapse created a free game based on the rumored descriptions of Polybius. In 2017, developer Llamasoft released their version of Polybius for the PlayStation 4. Rogue Synapse intended to simulate the rumored gameplay of Polybius. On the other hand, Llamasoft only used the urban legend as an inspiration with no intention of replicating any rumored gameplay. So, did Polybius ever exist?
Yeah, my question. Did it ever exist?
It's a great question. Would you like a spoiler?
Sure.
No. What do you think so far, Kyle?
I think it's interesting.
Give me your opinions.
The stuff, you know, stuff like this is kind of always interesting to me. Like, was it the thing? Was it not a thing? People claim it was a thing, then people claim it was not a thing. But it leads me to go on to ask you, was it a real thing?
So there are some extra things to the story. This comes from Super Jump magazine. There's some extra nods to it that could pinpoint the fact that it could be real. We even have the name of the arcade that it supposedly was sat in. Hmm. Around 1981, kids noticed a new game at the Malibu Grand Prix Arcade in Beaverton, Oregon, which is a suburb of Portland, to my knowledge. And the pastel blue word Polybius on the title screen announced its name. During play sessions, there was a flurry of bright geographic shapes that caught their attention. So we even have that, right?
We have that, yes.
Polybius's story spread after its internet debut. In August 2003, the magazine GamePro included it in its Secrets and Lies list article, in which they noted, and I quote, "Nobody seems to be willing to name names or authenticate any tales floating around the internet." Around 3 years later, one person came forward with information. Stephen Roach, a coin-op user, posted on the forums that a South American company has commissioned Cinelotion, his company, to create a game in 1980. After a smooth development phase, the game got a limited release, and Roach wrote, "Shortly after, we received terrible news. A 13-year-old boy from Lloyd, District of Portland, Oregon, had suffered an epileptic fit while playing the game only 6 days after the machines had initially been installed. Investors became worried. Afterwards, financiers pulled their support for the project, according to Roach, and the project had failed before it could reach a wider audience. Historical events linked to the aspect of the Polybius story. On November 29th, 1981, we were talking about the concept of Brian Morrow, who was playing Asteroids for 28 hours straight. he had a nauseous fit. And Michael Lopez was not playing a game called Polybius. He was playing a game called Tempest, which is an actual game. And in fact, Tempest is one of my favorite arcade games. Yeah. So based on the combination of what Polybius is known as we talk about it here on the show, and what Tempest is this concept that you spin this dial and you shoot down a pipe at creatures climbing up this geometric shape, and you would shoot down at them, and you would spin the dial, and you would do it, and, you know, the graphics would become all bright, and it would jump out towards the screen at you and make it look like a three-dimensional feel. It's a really brilliant game, very very interesting with the way they have the graphics done for that time. So I guess I could see where the story would get mixed up, that he was playing something like Polybius when in reality he was playing Tempest. You still there with me?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Bob.
And we actually have a quote from Michael Lopez, and it says, "Suddenly I got sick and stumbled outside where I threw up all over the parking lot. One of my friends walked me back home, but we didn't make it all the way there. My head hurt so bad. It got to where I couldn't speak. I couldn't walk anymore. I collapsed on someone's lawn 4 blocks away from my house, rolling and screaming in pain. It felt like my head was cracking open. Police found the prone teenager on the stranger's lawn. Migraines raked his brain for quite a while after the Tempest play session. Fortunately, both Morrow and Lopez survived their experiences." Apparently, In the 1980s, FBI monitored the arcades in the Portland area. Some arcade owners were giving cash prizes to players, and authorities tended to the view of this as illegal gambling. To add to this, the venues also gained a reputation of dark dens of drug dealing, pickpockets, and violence. So the FBI apparently was already investigating arcades in the Portland area. And as I was saying before, the authorities were rigging the machines with microphones and such. And some of these games included Galaxian, Scramble, and Tempest arcade cabinets with microphones and cameras to record evidence of illicit activities. In 1981, 10 days after Lopez and Navarro incidents, law enforcement agencies raided Portland arcades, and agents seized rigged arcade cabinets and money during these stings. Local kids must have watched a sequence of events with some trepidation. First, at least two of their fellow players became sick after they played games, and then the government agents rushed into their beloved entertainment hotspots. Imaginative minds might have even created explanations in the process of these incidents. On the internet, different stories can meld into the sinister account of a mysterious arcade cabinet mind control and Men in Black. Over the years, more users could add their own details to the story. It's also in a Nine Inch Nails video, by the way.
Yeah, I remember something
The Nine Inch Nails music video, Less Than. You can see a copy of Cabinet of Polybius in it. And the tale grew, and it just kept growing and growing, and it's an online urban legend. Did Polybius actually ever exist? And the answer is no.
No.
No. So Polybius, we were talking about that Stephen Roach guy who claimed he owned the company that the Polybius game was commissioned to make. And come to find out years later that Stephen Roach did it as a hoax.
Really?
Because the CoinOp Arcade website was an idea to collect rare and obscure arcade cabinets. And Polybius was something that he made up.
A scam.
A trick to make people believe that he had a more rare game than everybody else.
Well, you know what? That's one way to sell some games there. But the thing is, it worked for some sense, right? People got on the whole bandwagon there, it seems like.
It did. And it's out of any story we talk about, right? Because I don't believe Polybius as a creepypasta story by any means, right?
No.
Because a creepypasta is generated fiction. And there's some actual truth to this. I mean, I guess maybe it's a creepypasta in a very, very, very primitive way, but I would say, like, you had some truth to it. You know, there's some kids there and they're seeing their friends get sick.
Yeah.
You know, and now here comes the FBI and they're raiding arcades and taking cabinets. You know, I'm a 10-year-old kid hanging out in an arcade. I just want to play Donkey Kong.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, oh my God, these guys in suits are showing up after my friends just got sick.
Yeah.
You know, speculation's going to run wild.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, did you hear, you know, Marco got sick? Oh, what happened? Oh, you know, I think the FBI poisoned them. And they're, you know, it's fascinating. And it's interesting to see and hear stories of, like, the Men in Black showing up to these arcade cabinets and opening it up, and instead of collecting quarters, they were collecting data. Now, did the MK Ultra thing actually exist? Yes. Yes, it did. But MK Ultra, to our knowledge, and we're not a conspiracy theory podcast, folks, don't think I'm getting into it, but allegedly, the MK Ultra project ceased to exist in 1972 and even continued somewhat in 1975. The story of Polybius first started coming around in 1982. In Portland, Oregon. And the other thing is, if you're going to do this, I would pick probably a bigger place to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. So what's your take on the whole Polybius mystery comp, Panic?
Fascinating, Bob. But if at the end of the day, it's only to generate minds to buy a certain product, and that's what it looks like it did. But when you think about it, in a world where this could be real, it's some fascinating stuff. You just never know, Bob. You just never know. Maybe we're being flim-flam bamboozled once again to think it's not a real thing, but maybe it could be a real thing, Bob.
Yeah, I...
You never know.
And the fact that it... At the time when the Simpsons episode came out, I mean, the internet was a popular-ish thing, but it wasn't as common as we have it now. So even the fact that it was making its way into the concept of the Simpsons... It was a baffling story in and of itself.
Yeah.
That could be an episode, by the way. If I ever did a Bob After Dark Conspiracies thing, the concept that the Simpsons got it right would be an interesting episode topic in general, but it's very conspiracy theory-y, and I'm not that type of show.
Yeah, no. Well, you did a good job, Bob.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate that, Count Panic. Would you play it?
Sure, Bob.
Fun fact, I have.
Oh, you have?
I have. I have played. So years down the line, right, even recently, people took the Polybius game that these two companies have made, and they've actually put it in arcade cabinets.
Yeah.
And people painted it up to look like the original, like what the original Polybius cabinet looked like once upon a time ago. James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd online, did an entire episode where he was at like a video arcade and he was being attacked by a Polybius machine. I played an actual Polybius arcade machine. And it's kind of eerie because like you're sitting down to play it and you're like, oh no, you know what I mean? You know, the story's, what was the word that Prince Harry used? Bomb guffled?
Yeah.
I forgot what the word was. I declared that my word and I forgot.
Humbuggle.
Yeah, you know, it's a humbuggle. Right. But you sit down and you're playing the dark machine and it's got these, you know, the letters on it. You're like, oh my God, you know, yeah. Like, am I going to be taken or whatever?
I mean, you never know, Bob.
No, yeah. Well, that's I have played it. So yes, they've made cabinets. I've had a chance to sit down and play Polybius. It's a fascinating story with a very disappointing end because it's like, the story's been around for 40 years,
yeah.
Right?
And yeah.
It's such an interesting thing, and it's like one of those things. Like you don't want to root that the government was mind controlling people via video games. You don't want that to be like the thing you root for or believe in. But the fact that like you've been building up this history and this hype for so long, it's like, well, where did it come from? You know, or is there any truth to this?
Yeah.
And then nah. He just did it out of a joke. Now, I know. There are definitely probably some conspiracy theorists out there who's like, nah, it was totally real. I believe that. I'm going to put my foot down, folks. Polybius did not exist.
Well, that's the thing. No matter, even if you solve it today here, Bob, people are going to still say, Bob, I know it exists. I know it's real. You can't tell me otherwise, Bob. So you just got to know you got to deal with people like that.
Absolutely. Well, Count, do you have any closing words for our audience tonight?
Stick to playing Pac-Man, maybe. Yeah, I know. That's a fun game.
Would you like to know my favorite arcade cabinets?
What is it?
I juggle between them. Dig Dug. I'm a big Dig Dug fan.
You're a Dig Dug guy.
I love Dig Dug, Pac-Man, and I love Tempest.
Those are your go-to?
Those are my go-to. Yeah, I'm at an arcade and I see they have Tempest, that's what I'm going to go do.
All right, that makes sense.
But I digress, Count Panic. Do you have any, so you want to stick to those games? You're not going to go looking for Polybius?
I don't think so, Bob. But, you know, if it was offered to me, maybe I'll take a stab at it to see how exactly what goes down there. But, you know, I'll stick to Pac-Man, Frogger, all those classics. Is there arcade anymore? Is there such thing as arcades anymore, Bob, around here?
Well, they're popular. Mostly they're arcade bars.
Yeah, Chicago has a couple, right?
Griffith used to have one.
We used to have one in Griffith, Indiana. Not anymore.
I've always told myself I'd like to reopen up an arcade.
Arcade bar or just arcade?
No, an arcade bar.
Arcade bar.
There's Galloping Ghost.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
Have you ever been there?
No, but I hear a lot of things about it.
It's a great place. Yeah. Anyway, that's a story for another day. Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable and celebrating your belated birthday. I love you so much and I miss you tremendously. Mom, hope you have sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.